We ended up scheduling a C-section.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, a scheduled C-section, so much better than
an
emergency.
This is what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
That they're actually kind of great.
Yeah. I remember laying there and just being like, oh, it's a little chilly in here. And they're like, hold on, let's adjust the dial. And I was like, yeah, this is fantastic.
Alrighty. I'm Maya.
I'm Eric.
This is a first-time parenting podcast called End of the World. Our baby is now 7.5 weeks old, almost 2 months. And we are graced today with the presence of some of our good friends who came to visit us for the weekend, brought us food, cooked it for us, and watched our baby so that we could relax.
Yeah, it was a pretty sweet deal.
Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'll go first since I have the microphone in my face and he's not paying attention. Hi, I'm Jen.
Hi, Jen. Welcome to our podcast, our award-winning podcast.
Very excited to be here. Thanks.
And I'm Tommy, lifelong friend of Eric.
Lifelong.
Literally lifelong?
Since junior high, lifelong.
Okay.
Yeah. The years that count.
Yeah. So we thought it would be fun to have you guys on the podcast because Eric always refers to you as the shining example of the kinds of parents he would like us to be. I always remind him that's maybe not super realistic because you guys are pretty chill parents, and that's not what I picture for us, but that's what we strive to be.
We are very not chill people.
Yeah. So I thought we could kind of talk about, you have two kids that we really love hanging out with, but maybe before we get into how you managed to do that, I thought maybe we could, like when we first started the podcast, we shared a 5-minute how we met, when we had kids, that whole thing. And I think you guys have a pretty unique story about that.
About how we met.
And having the kids.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like how old were you when you met and then how old were you when you had kids? Cause we're geriatric. Millennials.
We're now geriatric millennials.
That's right.
Yeah.
You are.
And so
we all
Maya
are.
Maya just taught
to be
me
clear.
That phrase.
Yeah, yeah, we all are.
Yeah.
I was born in 1979, so I think technically I'm still an X.
I think you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Wow. We have a Gen Xer on our podcast.
Whoa.
I don't even know what to do with that.
I'll see myself. All right. So Tom and I met on a dark and windy country road when we were 19 and 20.
In Oak Grove.
I had just flown back from Korea. I was visiting family. Tom had just moved to the area, and he had met some friends of mine. And so they kept saying, oh, you should meet this guy, Tom. He's real fun. We skateboard around town. He listens to punk rock. And he's in the Army. And I was like, that's all right. I don't really care about meeting him. But we ended up meeting and getting married a year later at 21 and 20.
Wow.
And we didn't realize then that everyone's looks of shock were like because they didn't think we should get married, but everyone really liked us together. So like it was just really weird, confusing time, but we felt really confident about our decision.
Yeah,
and that was
for sure.
20 years ago now. So
yeah.
That worked out.
Is this year your 20-year anniversary?
Yeah, February was our 20th anniversary.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Do you still feel like it was a good decision?
Yeah,
definitely.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. That would have been sad if they said no on our podcast.
We were like, not the time and place.
Long pause. Yes.
I'm still thinking about it.
But yeah, so we knew though that we were young and we had made this decision that was, you know, life-changing. And for us, you know, at the time that we made it, committed to being together forever. But we also knew we were young, like we didn't know what we were going to do with our lives. And so we asked the Army if they would send us to Hawaii for 3 years so I could go to college.
Is that how you got to Hawaii?
Yeah. He even got a bonus.
I told them I wouldn't re-enlist unless they said like I could go to Hawaii.
Smart.
Yeah. So he worked at the Army and I went to college at night and hung out at the beach all day. It was pretty sweet. And we were surrounded by all these other couples who were having kids. And we just didn't feel like that was us yet. We're like, we're not ready for that.
Were they your age or older?
Our age.
Yeah. Yep. Also young. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a thing in the military. People get married. They move away for the first time. They end up marrying their high school sweetheart. And, you know, because you grow up thinking you're supposed to get a job and get married and have kids.
And then when you join the Army, you're sort of like fast tracking those first couple steps. You're like, well, I got the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they blast kids out. In They have nothing else to do. So they like make almost no money and have all this time to spend together because they can't afford gas or a car. So they sit in their like apartments or whatever.
Right.
And just blast out kids. And it's like $50 a kid.
That's one way to
like give birth.
It's a while away at a time, you know?
Yeah.
So we didn't have kids yet. So we were kind of the outliers in our Army friends because we were the young married ones that didn't have kids and weren't talking about having kids yet. And then we got pregnant right when we found out Tom was going to Iraq. So I freaked out. a lot. Yeah. I was like, wait, I'm 8,000 miles from any family.
Yeah.
He's about to be in a desert. And this was 2003. So the war was like still fresh, you know? So it was a whole lot of unknowns. And we ended up losing that baby. And, but we didn't talk about it until he was actually in Iraq. I remember he called me the day he was driving from Kuwait into Iraq. And I was like, well, can we talk about that miscarriage?
Yeah.
Yikes.
And he was like,
It was our anniversary. Because on February 3rd, we crossed the border. Yeah. Like the first time.
Damn.
And so that was the moment that I felt like I needed to talk to him about, hey, like we didn't really talk about what it would be like to have kids. And then like, as soon as we found out and started to wrap our heads around it, we lost the pregnancy. So we just never talked about it because I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know anyone who had been through anything like that. I was surrounded by all these people that had, that were like having lots of kids.
Yeah. And how, if you're comfortable saying, how far along were you?
We thought I was 12 weeks, but after the, procedure, they said it was only about 8.
Okay. So first trimester.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't gone into this yet on the podcast, but this is one of those things that we've learned, like fertility, everyone we know, it seems like has been through a miscarriage and had the same experience where they were like, I feel like I'm the only one this has happened to. And then later in life, you realize so many people have been through it, but that's what part of what makes it so hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I didn't know how to talk about it to myself, let alone talk about it to my husband.
Yeah.
And here we are like 22 years old and he's driving into a desert.
Yeah.
So like not the time, I have awful timing, but I just felt like I needed to make sure it got out there and we talked about it.
Yeah.
So after he came home, we had a very serious talk. Like, is this something we want to do? We needed to figure it out because he was about to get out of the army. We didn't know what we were going to do. I had finished school, but we really just kind of had, we could do whatever we wanted. We just didn't know what. And we decided, no, we're ready. And we want to have a kid. And I got pregnant with Dylan, who is now this 15-year-old over here next to us.
A charming teenager sitting here watching us podcast.
We'll have our producer beep out your last name. AJ.
Oh, sorry.
AJ, we're going full anonymity on this.
Just so in case this podcast goes viral, you guys don't get fans knocking down your doors.
I want a 1950s car horn over here.
Deal. Deal. Okay.
Yeah, so when I had Dylan, we had just moved to Pennsylvania. I actually had to leave Hawaii 5 months pregnant while Tom was still there because we were concerned I wasn't going to be able to fly later.
Yeah.
So I flew from Hawaii to Pennsylvania in October of 2005, 5 months pregnant, and went right to work. But yeah, so we were, 27 when we had Dylan?
You were 27.
I was 27, so late 30s. But the funny thing was when we left Hawaii and came to Pennsylvania, like none of our friends were having kids. None of our friends were even thinking about getting engaged to anybody, let alone marriage and kids and all of that. And so I remember being pregnant and Tom had moved to join me after he got out of the army. And all of our friends would be like, let's go to it's Tuesday night. And I'm like, I just drove after a 9-hour day, drove an hour home. I'm very pregnant and tired. And
they'd be like, still smoke in the bars too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it was like super smoky, like they're closing a bar every night.
And our friends would be like, but Jen, like you can just sit there. You don't have to drink.
Doesn't that sound fun?
I'm just thinking of like, because I was pregnant in a pandemic, I didn't have to do anything the whole time I was pregnant. Yeah. It was great. And no, I wouldn't have wanted to.
Ours was just people like, right, but like you don't have to drink. And I was like, right, but I'm
still
tired
don't go
and
sit
uncomfortable
at a bar.
And it's smoky.
Yeah.
Side note, have you ever spent time sober in a bar?
It's not fun.
It's hell on earth.
Have you ever eaten pickled eggs, drank a Coke, and sit in a bar? That's not fun.
Oh my God.
And like Tom had just moved home, so he hadn't been home for 6 years. So I was like, yeah, go out, see your friends, do your thing.
Wait, when you, oh right. He wasn't gone for 6 years from you, but
Yeah, so he was like reconnecting with friends and like, so he was going out. We were still young.
When
you know?
Say army, we mean prison. I was doing a stint.
Right.
That's the code word.
So anyhow, then we had Dylan.
Yeah.
So Dylan, I was induced a week early. He was actually due on the 23rd of December, which I was really hoping for because he would share a birthday with Eric and with Andy.
Uh-huh.
And we would have like, you know, a huge birthday celebration. Fun fact, the doctor that delivered Dylan delivered Andy. AJ, please remove the last name.
And so Tom was around for Dylan's birth.
Yes. Yeah, so Tom was around for Dylan's birth. But only for the first month of Dylan's life.
Right.
Because then he had to go to a school in Arkansas.
Right.
So my mom and dad had come to visit. They stayed with us for probably that first month.
Your mom did, for sure.
Yeah, my mom stayed for the first month. My dad stayed just for a couple of days. And so my mom left. And then I think Tom and I had maybe a week together before he had to leave for 30 days. So now I'm in Pennsylvania in the wintertime, just me and this
the most beautiful place on earth.
Yeah.
Not like Hawaii. Ew.
Yeah, just me in the winter. And I would regularly be texting my friends back in Hawaii with like the temperatures. I'm like, guys, it really does get down to 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Now I know why it's on the thermostat, because it really does measure that low. I didn't have a winter coat when I moved to Pennsylvania because I'd never needed one.
And
but
we
anyway.
We had like 2 feet of snow like in one shot. And you're inside with the baby and I'm outside like cursing and shoveling snow for the first time in 6 years. And you're like, snow. I'm like, no.
It's so beautiful.
I will drive this car.
I still remember your face, because I remember holding Dylan up in the window and like waving his little hand at Tom and just the contempt on Tom's face while we're warm and smiling and he's just shoveling snow.
Yeah, when you grow up around snow, it's a cute. Different yeah. experience.
Yeah.
As soon as it starts snowing, I mean, it's the same with you. You're like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. And I'm like, well, we're going into that dead time of the year where we just sit around waiting for this shit to melt.
Guess I gotta check the oil and make sure I have enough gas.
Yeah, so when Dylan was a month old, Tom went away, my mom was gone, and it was just me and this baby in this house.
And how long were you alone with Dylan?
I made it about a week before I booked a flight to Tennessee to go stay with my parents.
Yeah. And then how long did you stay in Tennessee?
A month. Yeah. And then I came home when Tom was coming home. And actually, while we were in Tennessee, I drove to Arkansas to his school so that he could be with me for Dylan's first tubby, like his first bath. So Dylan's first bath was in a hotel in Arkansas while Tom was at school.
Presidential suite. Hilton, downtown Arkansas.
That's where Dylan had his first bath.
Yeah, that was Dylan's first fancy. Like tub bath. Yeah.
Downtown Little Rock.
Nice.
Do you guys reminisce about that when you bathe him now?
Yeah. Once a year. We give him his first tubby.
With Dylan, it was just a lot of fun too, right? Because he was the first baby and he was our baby. I'd always liked people's babies, but you know, it's really, you get more excited when it's your own.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you guys.
We're learning that. Yes.
Are learning.
I've always been indifferent to other people's babies and I'm slightly less indifferent to my own.
No, right? You had, this is a tangent, but what did you say to me 2 days ago?
I said that I loved our baby.
You said, I feel comfortable saying that I love this baby.
I'm very indifferent to other people's babies. I could almost care less.
Yeah. I have a hard time with other people's babies.
Yeah.
Once they're kids,
right, totally
then they're
different.
Cool to hang out with, but it's just so much work. Yeah.
That's really hit or miss.
Right. It depends on the kid.
But a lot of that first year is a blur to me because I worked retail. So shout out to anyone who works in retail and has kids because, you know, like your hours are all over the place. Holidays are not your own.
Yeah.
Plus the store I worked in, the rest of the management team, none of them had kids. So they didn't understand, you know, my needs and struggles with having to be able to get to a sick kid at daycare.
Yeah.
Or I remember specifically having to work Mother's Day because the other kid was like, but I'd never miss a Mother's Day with my mom.
Cool.
And I was like, right. But like,
and you gotta be like, you gotta be on all the time.
All
like,
retail,
like you're customer facing.
Yeah.
You know, most of my jobs, I've been able to be like, I'm in a bad mood today. Leave me alone. You know?
Yeah. I don't
know. That must be nice.
So then if we fast forward, since I've already taken the Dylan story, I think I took an hour, but, you know, once Dylan was around two and a half, I started to think like, you know, if we wanted to have another kid, when would we want to do that?
Yeah.
Because I was pretty stoked just having Dylan, right? Like we had a good thing going, just the three of us.
Yeah.
But I really felt like, you know, I felt like our family could use one more.
Yeah.
Right.
And was that like, because you wanted two kids, because you wanted Dylan to have a sibling?
I think there was part of me that wanted Dylan to have a sibling.
Yeah.
Right. Like I had a lot of morbid thoughts around that time.
Yeah.
You also thought I was going to die in Iraq.
Which makes sense. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I was getting there. so I just thought about one day, like us being gone and Dylan not having anyone. Cause at that time, my brother didn't have kids yet. And all of the cousins on Tom's side that Dylan has are all older.
Yeah.
So, I thought I grew up with a brother. And even though there were times that we like hated each other, it was also nice kind of having that partner.
Like that shared experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we found out Tom was getting deployed again.
Yep.
So, At this point, Tom had started to open up about some of his experiences in his first deployment, which he didn't do. Like, when we talked about his deployment the first time he was gone, I mean, he would tell me what movies he was watching.
Right.
And I knew that he was in a place that he didn't get his mail very often. I knew that, like, there were times that he couldn't get toilet paper, you know, because people wouldn't. What I didn't realize then was because the trucks wouldn't drive out to where he was because they wouldn't risk getting blown up.
Right.
Because it was so dangerous where Tom was. Or
did you have to use your hand?
They would leave it outside in the rain. And like, because it would rain in Iraq, and it would like rain, and all of a sudden you'd have these bricks of toilet paper.
And you're just like using soupy handfuls of toilet paper.
This is great. We use a lot of baby wipes.
So Tom had started sharing some of his Iraq stories with me when we found out he was deploying a second time.
Right.
And this deployment was going to be longer because it was with a National Guard unit, which meant they had to do train up in the States. Like, where were you? Mississippi?
Yeah, I was in Mississippi and then in Louisiana.
Yeah, so he was going to be in the U.S. for about 6 months, but essentially deployed from me. And so I remember, I think it might have been like the night before he left for Mississippi. And I was like, hey, we've been talking about a second kid. Like, I want a second kid. Like, we're going to do that now. And he was like, sure. And then two
he
weeks
spun
later,
around by the door, dropped his duffel bag and said, let's do this.
And then 2 weeks later, he called me and I was like, hey, and he goes, you're pregnant. I'm like, yeah. So it was crazy. And that was Matthew.
And this is, by the way, this is one of those stories that as people who went through fertility stuff, just unreal to me. I cannot believe that those are sometimes real stories. Cause we always were like, people are lying, right? Like, it's not that easy to get pregnant, but sometimes it is.
Not to be the typical guy, but people are like, we're going to try. I'm like, great. We're going to try. This is going to be an awesome time for me. No. Like, 1 week, I'm like, all right. Good.
Great. We're going to try, and it's probably not going to work for a long time. Yeah.
No. 1 week.
Done. So I remember he got to come home for Christmas. So I was 3 months pregnant. I think I was 3 months pregnant. He got to come home for Christmas. I remember I made us go to Sears and take a family photo because I literally spent that entire year waiting to hear Tom was dead.
Right. Because now you knew what was going on.
Yeah. I had exit plans. I knew exactly what I was going to need to pack and move, who I needed to call to like figure out selling the house, like getting rid of the mortgage. I like had it planned out like where we were going to fit in my parents' house in Tennessee until I figured things out. Like I had this whole like, I just every day, like the phone rang. I don't know. I just felt like it was happening. And I just remember like holding my belly and apologizing because I was like, I'm so sorry. These aren't the thoughts I should have about you right now. You know, but I was working retail. Yeah. I was pregnant. My husband was Iraq and I had a 2.5-year-old.
Right. But it's also, you weren't having bad thoughts about the baby. You were thinking about how to protect the baby. I think that's probably really sweet. And maybe that's why he's such a secure child now and knows that you love him so much.
Is that that face? But so I remember thinking I had to get this toddler potty trained before I had a baby. I remember having to figure out even just birth, right? Because there's all these judgments that come along with how you're going to have a baby. Like everybody has an opinion about your pregnancy and your delivery and your parenting style. And I just remember people were like, you're not going to have a second C-section, are you?
Was your first one a C-section?
I had an emergency with Dylan.
I don't know if we knew that. Did we know that?
Oh, yeah. We lost his heartbeat.
Same thing happened to us.
Yeah, same thing happened to us.
I had been induced the night before.
Yeah.
And like nothing was moving along. It was the middle
exactly
of the day.
Exactly the same.
How did we not know this?
I don't know. Exactly the same.
And then the doctor, I remember at one point, because I was like, dude, I'm freaking hungry. Like, nothing is happening. People keep wandering in and out. Tom and John are in like matching jumpsuits and like high-fiving each other. They come in smelling like hoagies from down the street. Like, I was like, I don't know what is happening outside of this bed and this room, but everyone seems to be having a party without me and I'm miserable in here.
Why was John there? Why
it wasn't John. It was my brother. We had Canadian. They were wearing jumpsuits with the maple leaf on
them. Why was your brother hanging out? Just to keep you company?
Yeah, why not?
It was for Dylan.
Just for fun.
Oh, they wanted to meet Dylan.
Right,
But yeah, so with Dylan, the doctor was like, well, you know what? Let's break your water. Let's see what happens. And so felt like I was getting all these contractions and I suddenly understood like, woof.
This is exactly what we went through.
But I just remember at one point, the anesthesiologist was going to go home and they were like, hey, did you want an epidural? And I was like, yeah, I told you guys I want an epidural. Like, is it bad enough that I can get one yet? Because I didn't want to be like that crazy screaming woman. So they were like, yeah, you're like an you know, an 8 out of 10 on the pain, according to these charts. And I'm like, I feel like I'm an 8 out of 10. Yeah, let's do this. Yeah. Let's stick me.
Yep.
And then once I had an epidural, it was like the sun came up. It was like the room brightened and I relaxed and then I fell asleep. And then woke up to all this beeping and people running in and talking to me about C-sections and shoving papers for me to sign.
Yeah.
And I was like, but there's no heartbeat. Like, I will sign whatever. Let's go.
I know.
And I just, I remember every, the emergency section was traumatizing.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
So then when it was time to have Matthew, they were like, you know, aren't you going to try a VBAC? Don't you want to feel like what it feels like to have a delivery?
Yeah.
And all these people would talk about like the beauty of natural childbirth.
Yeah.
And so I had a doctor that supported whatever I wanted to do. She was like, yeah, if you want a C-section, great. If you want to try vaginal delivery, we can do that, whatever you feel like. But then the logistics of realizing that I was going to have to get my mom up from Tennessee to help take care of a toddler and take care of me, we ended up scheduling a C-section.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, a scheduled C-section, so much better than an emergency.
This is what I've heard, that they're actually kind of great.
Yeah, I remember laying there and just being like, oh, it's a little chilly in here. And they're like, hold on, let's adjust the dial. And I'm like, yeah, this is fantastic. And so my mom had come up from Tennessee, and our friends Jason and Gary had actually, there was a Dinosaurs Alive or something like that happening at the arena nearby. So they got tickets to take Dylan for the day. And so our two friends took Dylan for the day of Matthew's surgery, like my surgery, so that we didn't have to worry about Dylan.
Oh, that's great.
Amazing. Yeah.
So the two of them took Dylan. So my mom was able to be with me. And the week of my C-section, I had learned about this organization that was helping coordinate video conferencing for soldiers overseas to be at the delivery of their child. But by the time I had found them and connected with them, they weren't going to be able to get Tom from his outpost to the main base in time. So we actually had we got to have a conference the next day.
Okay.
So the day of the C-section comes, Dylan's taken care of. My mom is there with me. We go in for surgery. My mom narrates the whole thing to me. And the whole time is just like, oh, Jen.
Did you ask her to narrate it to you, or that was just...
No, okay. No.
You do not ask her to do anything.
My mom will just nod and do what she wants anyway. Okay. Like, I even remember, because we had I had my tubes tied, and I just remember my mom was anti this, because her dream is to have a little granddaughter to put in all the frilliest of dresses. And I just remember the doctor was like, Jen, are you sure? And I was like, absolutely. Tom and I talked about this. Like, this is the decision.
And did you do that on the same day? Like, same procedure
because,
as the...
Yep. Yeah.
Because you're already opened up.
Yeah. And so I remember my mom stood up and watched, and she looks at me, and she does this, like, weird spinny things with her fingers, and she's like, yeah, no. No more babies. And I was like,
it's a mess in there. Oh, jeez.
And I was like, I don't think
they just tied it up like a 2-year-old double knot in his shoes.
I was like, mom, just
I'm just picturing
down.
Her like reaching over the curtain and peeking.
Yeah. She's like all suited up. I'm just shaking her head and sitting down. And then she'd stand up and look and she'd be like, and shake her head and sit down. But then the worst part, though, is the recovery, right? Because to recover, you get wheeled into this room. Your baby is somewhere. Your family is somewhere. And you're just sitting in this room waiting for them to, like, decide that you're recovered enough and take the big, like, pillows off your legs or whatever. Mm. And then I remember getting out of that and going into my room. And then it was weird. It was just a flurry of activity. But I remember the worst was the first night, because with Dylan, Tom had stayed the night with me.
Yeah.
But my mom couldn't stay the night with me because she had to go home and take Dylan, right? And so I just remember being in the hospital by myself. I didn't feel safe having the baby in the room with me.
Because you can't move around.
Yeah. So Matthew's in the nursery. Tom's in Iraq. My mom's in with my kids. And I just remember laying in this room in so much pain, but like not wanting to call the nurses because I could hear all of these like deliveries happening around me.
Yeah.
And I just remember it was like being like the most silent, saddest night. So then the next day, I remember my room was descended upon by all of these news reporters because they had heard about this conference with Tommy, because that company had it as a way to kind of like...
But did they tell
themselves?
You they were going to tell?
They probably did. Ugh. They probably did. I don't know. Like, thankfully, one of our friends was a photographer, so she was there, and I kind of had, like, I had Jamie to lock in on. Mm. And I just remember they wheeled me down to this room, because you have to remember, this is, like, 2005, so it's not like Tom had an iPhone and we could just, like, you know, video chat. So they rolled me down to this one operating room that had video conferencing capabilities, and so it's me sitting next to this, like, operating table and this huge screen and holding this baby going... And there's a whole staff from the hospital behind us, plus Dylan, plus my mom. Actually, my mom got left back in our room because she got lost in the crowd, like everyone trying to shuttle me down to this room. So I think Jamie had to go find her and bring her down to me. And there's this big video screen, this huge crowd of people, and Tom, who is just like exhausted.
Yeah.
And he's just like barely awake, looking at the screen, and it's me. And I'm like, there's all these people.
It's like all these doctors like politely clapping behind you.
And I'm trying to hold up this baby. I'm like, here he is.
I was sitting on a folding chair in a 20 by 20 room with tile from like ceiling to floor with a big drain in the middle.
Like you were in the room and saw. When the guy wakes up.
Yeah. It's on an old army base in Iraq that we took over. So I'm like, I bet you people are like murdered in here.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. And I'm sitting on a cold metal chair watching this like thing on TV. Yeah.
What was it like meeting your son over video?
It's kind of like surreal, you know, because it's like, it's real and you're like, holy crap, this is awesome. But then you're like, I have to get on a convoy and go back to the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
It was 2005. So they were like, listen, your wife is not inside this box. It's a television. Actually a video.
This was 2008.
Matthew was 2009. Sorry.
So like this is like later in life because we had, what were people using to chat? Like video?
Skype?
Skype. We had Skype and I was like, oh, we have Skype. Oh, this is amazing.
Except that where he was, his connection was always really bad.
Yeah.
So it was honestly worse because we would spend the whole Skype session going, I can't, you're frozen.
Yeah.
You're frozen. Frozen?
And look at us now in 2021 doing the same on Zoom.
I know,
we've come so far.
Yeah. Sorry, 2009 was Matthew.
I can only imagine how bad Skype was in World War II.
Oh, it must have been the worst.
Gross.
But yeah, I just remember sitting in that room and thinking, oh my gosh, I get to see Tom because I hadn't seen him.
In months?
In months.
Oh my God.
And it was so rare that I would get to talk to him, right?
Like, yeah.
Because there are some people when they would deploy and they would be in areas where they could talk every day. Like I remember I had one friend who she was upset because her husband got Starbucks every day, at, like where he was stationed. And she was like, I don't even have Starbucks. Like, and whereas Tom is like, I was able to stretch that toothpaste to last me. You know, like I might get, you know, like a smoke signal every 3 weeks or something.
So you two are seeing each other and there's like a room full of doctors behind you just being like, this is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And meanwhile,
they're
just like,
we both really happy. we pulled through for them.
Wow.
And we're so tired. And I just remember, saying something about Matthew and then Tom was like, I got to eat chocolate cake. Yeah, so Tom didn't hold Matthew until Matthew was 4 months old.
So he was gone. He wasn't home until he was 4 months old. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there were some soldiers who would coordinate, like you get 2 weeks of R&R, right? Mm. Rest and relaxation, vacation, basically. And some would coordinate it to be home, like when their child was born. But for us, we decided that it would be better for him to take it at the end. They let him like take it that way. And that way he could kind of create a paid paternity
leave
situation. And so my employer, actually the FMLA laws had changed. So I was able to extend my FMLA because I had a soldier returning home from deployment.
That's great.
Which was phenomenal. So I ended up being able to take 5 months off instead of just 12 weeks.
Yeah. So you guys had like, what is that, a month together?
Yeah.
I think I had 45 days before I had to go back to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what, Jen, what was it like for you? Like Eric and I have talked a bunch on this podcast about, you know, the feeling of like you bring a baby home, then you're like, oh shit, like no offense, children who are listening to this, but like you bring a baby home and you're like, my life is over. Everything is different. I don't have free time. Like we went through this really dark time, sort of like, what was it like? I mean, this is your second kid. Yeah. You're already a mom, but like, what was that like doing it by yourself? Cause I just can't imagine.
I think I just kept telling myself I chose this.
Yeah. Did
you
that
know
help?
I mean,
that didn't make me feel bad.
I don't know that I considered
I was like,
any.
Why did I choose this?
No, Eric kept saying that it was my. Eric kept being like, "You wanted a baby," and I'm like, "We spent years doing IVF."
I think there was a lot of what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
Like, why did I do this to myself? Especially because I mean, because people don't know what it's like when you're not home, right? So they would see me, like, you know, I go out to the cabin, right. I've got a toddler and a baby, and yeah, I guess yeah. I made it look easy.
And yeah, yeah right? And just to be clear, Eric always tells this story as an example of, like, how great it can be to have a baby. And he's like, Jen had Matthew, and, like, a week later, she came, was hanging out with all of us at the cabin, and the kids were being so good, and we were all drinking beer and having a great time. Like, yeah. I'm sure that's not what it was like from Jen's perspective.
That's because you don't yeah. see the 5 minutes prior to when we're driving up, we're like, listen, you little motherfucker.
Yeah.
You better behave. I'm gonna fucking ruin your life.
And that seems to work. They're very well behaved.
Well, I mean, the thing is, with Dylan being the first kid in our friend group, he basically had built-in best friends.
Right.
And so...
Which is not the same as those guys, like, helping you raise the baby.
Right.
But he
right.
had friends, yes. which is nice. Yeah.
And so, you know, he... I remember when Eric was like, hey, I'm in town. We're going to be up at the cabin. And I was like, oh my God, Dylan will love to see that. And he'd love to see the trains going by. So I was, you know, for me, I was like, it'll be a great break for me and the baby. Like, it's a reason to get outside. Like, yeah. Let's go do this.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just the things like I had to, I would say probably the hardest thing about being a parent was building in a lot of grace for myself and allowing myself to have breaks and cry and you know, not have it all together. And maybe yeah. Dylan got a few more happy meals for dinner instead yeah. of home cooked meals. You know what I mean? Like, I had thought when I was pregnant with Dylan that I was going to be that mom that got all of the information, right? I was reading all of these books. I was reading.
Everyone thinks they're going to be that yeah. mom. Yeah. It seems so
I was
easy.
Like, I need a schedule and I yeah. need, he's going to have organic veggies for everything. And that, you know, like, and
it's so funny because you are so not that mom.
Right.
Like,
because while I was pregnant, I got so sick of, like, I would read something and make a note for myself. And then I'd read the next thing and it'd be the exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I would read something else. And I didn't have the luxury of being able to reach out to friends because I didn't want it to seem like I didn't know what I was doing. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you talk to like, if I talked to my mom just thought I was crazy, but my mom also had a Korean nanny for the first year of my life. I will say that. So, cause like when she was pregnant with me, she told my dad, she was like, we're going back to Korea. And my dad had like volunteered for a reassignment to Korea so that she could have a Korean wow. nanny for the first year.
I mean, that sounds awesome.
Right?
We should yeah. move to Korea.
Yeah, yeah. I'm ready.
Totally. Actually, they have in Korea, they have hospitals. Like when you have a baby, you move into like this, like basically like a mom hotel for like the first period of time. My mom was like, oh yeah, you do this. And like, they take care of everything. They teach you how to take care of the baby.
How long do you get to stay there?
I don't know. I didn't look much more into it, but I remember she was telling me that she thought it was like crazy that I didn't know about it. And I was like, mom, first of all, I don't live in Korea, but.
You know what I heard? You know how when you're breastfeeding, it sucks and it hurts yeah. your nipples all the time. somebody told me that there's these things called silverettes. Have you heard of those?
No.
They're like little silver cups that you put over your nipples so that they're not like chafing against whatever you're wearing, oh. which like in retrospect would have been great when I was first starting breastfeeding. In France, they hand those out to new moms for free in the hospital. So
they
like,
should.
Here you go. Right. Like I keep hearing these stories about how other countries actually like give a shit and help new moms. And in the US it's like, all right, see you later.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you had a child 2 days
free.
Ago.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah. You know? You're fine. You got
figure it out.
Your insurance only yeah. covers you through Sunday. You so want, we're going to be letting yeah. you go.
Do you
home.
Want nippleettes or do you want freedom?
yeah. If free. Your nipples hurt, why don't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and go buy some nippleettes or whatever the fuck they're called.
Make some out of some cedar.
But yeah, so after reading all of that stuff during my first pregnancy and I was starting to get a little like insane,
yeah.
I was literally staying up at night wrestling with these decisions.
Yeah.
And finally I was like, people have been having babies.
I know.
Since the inception of humans.
Literally cavemen.
Right. Right. Like,
right.
And I was like, so I kind of adopted this mindset that was like, okay, if I'm craving something or I'm feeling something, how would it show up in prehistoric times? And I know this is like bizarre, but I would right. literally be like, oh man, I really want a milkshake. And I'm like, they didn't have milkshakes in prehistoric times. So I probably need some calcium.
Right.
Like, right.
But I think giving myself that freedom to like not worry about what anyone else would do and yeah. figure out what felt right to me.
Totally.
Just clicked. And so then, you know, as I made it through my pregnancies, made it through childhood, you know, raising kids and even now raising teens, because it's always like, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
I've just told myself I need to relax.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't hover and create, like I cannot curate every moment and every experience because one, that's going to hurt them.
Right.
The
they don't
run.
Need you to. Yeah.
Right. So it was really just about giving myself some grace mm-hmm. and some room. And I don't practice it all the time. Like you can, right, Tom? Yeah. but I think that was, it was probably the most freeing epiphany
yeah.
that I tried to carry through. So it's like, if it works for me, it works for me. Are my kids happy and healthy? Is my relationship happy and healthy?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do. Like
yeah.
F the bloggers, F the books, F whatever everyone else is going through.
Yeah.
I have to make sure I'm doing what works best for us right. because and we're the only ones that can do that.
Right. And I feel like this is something that every new mom goes through. Like a few weeks ago I was crying to Eric because I read two different sleep books and they said different things. And yeah. I tried one of the things on our baby and he didn't like it. And I was like, I'm a bad mom. He's never going to sleep. And by the way, he already sleeps great.
Yeah. I was going to say, meanwhile, he's just sleeping.
Yeah.
Fine.
He's just doing great. And I'm like messing with his naps, trying to get him to like sleep better,
and,
whatever that
and
means.
And she's like having a nervous breakdown yeah. about it. And I was like, I don't know.
Right.
He seems to be sleeping. So like just, yeah. I would just let him do that.
But the point is, like you feel so much pressure to be like, I got to read these books everyone's telling me. And I heard that this thing is good and whatever. And then you finally get to the conclusion that you're like, I think my baby will let me know when there's an issue.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a good segue into how to raise good children.
Yeah.
And maybe we should start with, before we ask them for their parenting advice. What?
Well, I was going to say like yeah. up until this weekend, I thought you guys raised great kids. And so we wanted to...
What was the...
So what changed, Eric?
What was the multiple turning point? Was it the golf ball towards the house? Is it your wall underneath your dartboard?
I think a little of both of those things, yeah.
No, I'm joking.
You have 18 years of that
yeah.
ahead of you.
I know. Yeah. But I was going to say, like, Eric, because you always, like, use them as an example of, yep. well, we both do, but I think you in particular, like, you grew up with Tom and got to watch him become a dad.
Yep.
And when we were pregnant and then when we first brought the baby home and now, like, as the baby's starting to do stuff, we always think of sort of, like, what would the do?
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate that.
We really do.
When me and Eric first met, first thing he said was, like, you're going to be a great dad one day.
Yeah.
I was like, thanks,
that's what you said to him in junior high.
You really give off a real fatherly vibe to
yeah.
me.
And then I held him.
Yeah.
And then we rented out a presidential suite and yeah. he gave me a bath and we've been best friends ever since.
And I don't know where we got the money at that age for a presidential suite because we were eating out of the trash cans.
I was going to say, I think part of the reason why Eric has been so impressed with you as a dad is because at the time in junior high, nobody thought that either one of you would be dads, let alone good yeah. dads, right? Like yeah. that was yeah. not. So I think
alone successful adults.
Right.
I don't think that any of us imagined we would survive long enough to be dads.
Yeah, I really think so. Yeah. But so what is it about these kids that makes you think that they have good parents? What do you like about them? And they're sitting right here listening. So feel free to compliment them.
They're really bright. They've always been interesting to interact with. Fun to be around. And when I say fun to be around, like they're funny, but also like they're, when you hang out with other people's kids, sometimes, you can tell that some people bend the world around their kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like you're entering their new world and it's like, they don't feel like you guys ever did that. Like they feel like you integrated them into your world.
Yeah. Like they're good at hanging out with adults.
Yeah. Like they can hang out and not freak out because they're not like entirely getting their own way.
And not just because they're teenagers now, like you guys have been like that since you were little.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Dylan was tiny when I first met you guys and he was just like fun to be around.
Yeah. I mean, and that doesn't mean that like they don't get bored when we sit here talking about this stuff like they
but
are
they
right
can
now. That's totally
the
fine.
That's the trick.
Yeah, but they can handle it and like they don't completely lose their minds. Like there is this like I don't know, you I don't know if it was by design or if it just sort of happened, but it does seem like you guys managed to bring them into your world instead of like throwing your world away and like catering like building yeah. some kind of artificial space around them, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We also, I think they have their own identity where most kids
yeah,
see
sure.
them like echo what their parents say.
Yeah.
When it comes to like everything, they're like, yeah, water's kind of spicy. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, you're a child, you don't even drink water. I see that with a lot of kids and it really annoys me.
Spicy like, water.
That is not your opinion.
Right, right.
Yeah. We probably started out like most parents do because your whole world does have to revolve around this little human.
Yeah. yeah.
So whatever was going to keep 2 and 3 year old Dylan happy was what we were going to, well, I guess I was going to do because I was just too tired to do anything else. Right. And also like you've got this human in your house and it's the only person you're interacting with. So yeah, I was always trying to like keep Dylan entertained and excited and it's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
And so what also happened, you know, when Tom got back and like we kind of settled into being a family of four, and as the kids were growing older, our marriage, I would say that was probably the hardest part of our marriage was when, and it wasn't that we loved each other any less, but we were really treating each other as partners to just hand off the next duty to. And I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, Tom, but I think for myself, I was building a lot of resentment, right?
And well, at that time I was working out of town like 12 hours a day, and I'd be at work and she's like, I need your help. I'm like, I'm at work. Like, I'm in the army. Like, I just can't be like, I'll go to go, guys. Due to calls.
Don't court-martial me. I don't even know what that means. They're going to put me back in that tiled room again.
But yeah, our whole world and our relationship just became about the kids. Like, our conversations were only about the kids. Right. And, you know, I would hear people say like, oh, always date your spouse. And I'm like, how? Like, one, there's no money because I'm paying $300 a week for daycare. And two, there's no time because I'm exhausted and kids got to be somewhere. Or
and this one kid keeps punching holes in the goddamn house with the dartboard.
And so, you know, we had some very tough discussions where I had to open up how I really felt, right? Like, the thing is, I love Tom.
It's just a bear.
Because I love Tom. And he is my favorite person to be around. And I always say, like, I wish I could see myself the way Tom sees me, because he just is so loving towards me and he's not loving towards anything else in his life. You know, like, he's very much Tom, right? Like, Tom is who Tom is. And so I'd always, like, I didn't trust that he really loved me the way he does, because he doesn't talk about anything else in life the way he talks about me. So I was always like, you're psycho. But anyhow, there was a point when the kids were young that I realized I didn't feel like I was married anymore. I felt like we were just co-parenting.
Yeah.
Like roommates.
Yeah, we were roommates.
With kids that we just get to pass off.
Yeah. And we had this discussion about realizing that if we do our jobs right, we're going to raise these incredible adults who are going to go off and leave us and forge their own path.
And you're still going to have each other.
And we're going to have each other. Yeah. So we realized that our kids couldn't be our first priority. You know, people are always like, oh, I put my kids first. And we're like, that's not healthy for us long term. Yeah. And so we had to kind
that's
of
That's a pretty profound realization.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was hard because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's not like we could be like, sorry, kids, I'm going to go hang out with dad.
Yeah.
But I think for us, it kind of recommitted ourselves mentally. And that's when we started to think about like, okay, well, what, how do we like not make this about the kids? Like, we'll do what's right for our family and what's right for us. And also like foster like our kids being the individuals and being strong. But I think a lot of that came from us having to communicate more. And like, I had to learn how to talk about what I was feeling. And Tom had to promise to give me space to not like act on how I was feeling, because Tom's a doer. So if I say, I think this is broken, he's like, let's fix it. Whereas I'm like, I just need to talk through it and realize it's not broken. So one of my takeaways when we had that epiphany, like we've got to figure out us and make sure we're always good and we're setting a good example, was I had to learn how to talk. Like, there was literally a point in my life where I wouldn't laugh out loud because I didn't want to like interrupt whatever was happening. So, which is funny now, because people know me for my laugh.
Yeah. Can we like pause on that? You like in general never laughed out loud?
Yeah. I wouldn't laugh out loud because I didn't want to attract any attention and detract from whatever was happening.
If you haven't picked up on this listening to the podcast, Jen now laughs a lot. That's a pretty core part of her personality. I just can't picture that. That's crazy. Yeah.
But I was raised in a house where you didn't talk. You know what I mean? Like, you just didn't talk. And even as adults, like, I have changed my family in the way that I make them talk.
Yeah.
Or I just stay away from them. So
I was raised in a family where you didn't talk. You just sat quietly until you were mad enough to start screaming at everybody.
Yeah. Maybe slam a door on your way out.
God damn it, come ready.
I once jumped out of my parents' car as they were slowing into the driveway so that I could jump out, get away from them, and jump into my car and speed off through the neighbor's yard.
Wow.
That was last year.
And so I had to learn to talk about my emotions. And so I would do that with Tom, but I would also do it with my kids. So if I lost my temper, I would come back and tell the kids what I had done wrong and apologize and ask for them to forgive me and understand it. And if they were having emotions, I would let them act out But then we would talk about it. So like Dylan right. couldn't just like smash something and walk away without us coming back and like me telling him how it affected me. Not right. like, what did you do there?
Yeah.
But it was like, hey man, like you're screaming and I can't figure out like what's going on. And you know, tailoring that to like a 4 or 5 year old, yeah. obviously, and just kind of being like, hey, are you in a bad mood? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, do you know why? And he's like, no. I'm like, cool. Well then why don't we just talk and like watch some cartoons? We'll talk in a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Listen, man, we can't keep renting presidential suites to have these talks. So you got to get your shit together.
There's only a couple of them that I know of. Yeah. And we have to travel every time. Yeah.
I love that, though. I mean, yeah. imagine, Eric, like when you were growing up, if somebody had ever asked you about your feelings or told you it was okay to be upset yeah, for no
that,
real reason.
That
or...
would be insane.
Yeah.
I cannot, it is inconceivable to me that my parents would acknowledge like
a feeling.
Yeah. Like a feeling, like how,
like it, that a kid can have a real feeling.
Yeah. yeah. It was just yeah. like, you do what you're supposed to do. And if you don't do it, then you're in trouble. But there's no, like your feelings are so irrelevant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because feelings are for people who have time to worry about nonsense.
Yeah.
And like, we're
people who
busy.
Have jobs.
Yeah.
my mom wanted me to go to a priest and talk to a Catholic priest. I'm like, no.
When you were how old?
I'm like, well, I was like 15, 16.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is stupid. She's like, you need to talk to a priest. I'm like, no. Like, fuck that dude. Like, I'm not going to talk to them. Like, you're ridiculous. Like, everything is ridiculous.
My yeah. parents, my mom asked me once if I was gay when I was yeah. a teenager.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Because you were mad all the time?
No, I think it was because I was like, well, yeah, it was because I was sort of like an artsy kid.
So what did you say?
Oh, I was like, no, what? And she was like, okay, I just wanted to make sure. I mean, I just want to know. And
because that was the only thing that made sense to them.
Yeah.
Like, if you were different in any way, you're like, oh, you're gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my kid's gay. I got my ears pierced. My dad's like, okay. I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I had like my ears pierced and I didn't want to.
You had a lot more than your ears pierced.
Yeah, I had piercings and I didn't care about having straight A's in school and all that. And like, I would think that if you have a more sort of nuanced emotional relationship with your children, you might be like, hey, how are you feeling? Like, yeah. what's yeah. going on? Right. And my parents were like, are you gay or something?
Yeah. And you're like, who cares if I am? Like, I'm still mad at you. Like, fuck, man.
And like, I'm someone who I like to have a good cry once in a while. And I don't know, because as extroverted as I am, it is very exhausting, right? So there are times that like, I just like to have a good cry. Yeah. Probably happens once a year yeah. where I like to just kind of be like, I don't know what's going on right now, yeah. but I just need a minute. Hey, Dylan, can I put you on the spot real quick? I'm wondering, how does it feel having a parent ask you about your feelings? Because we had the opposite, Eric and myself, and yeah. obviously dad. So, or do you even know that that's different from what some other kids might go through?
It feels pretty good because it gives us someone to talk to. When like
I'm going to cry.
And Dylan's 15.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we have like, I don't know, you understand a lot of the stuff we go through.
Can you imagine saying this to your parents at 15?
No, I can't imagine saying it now. Jen and I are just sitting here crying.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels good. I have someone to talk to when I'm in trouble and have problems, stuff.
Is it different from how you see like other kids interact with their parents?
Sometimes, yeah.
At his age, Tom and I were throwing toilets off a railroad bridge because we couldn't have these kind of conversations.
So I have been picking up on the fact that like, I feel like Dylan needs to go get into some good, clean fun that I don't know about, but like, trouble. Some good trouble.
Yeah.
Good trouble. Like, yeah. I don't want him to come home with a cop, but I want to know that he's out there throwing a toilet off a high bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
For example. Yeah.
Do you feel like you should be out throwing a toilet off a high bridge?
Yeah, but it's also kind of hard with, like, pandemic and
a lot. It's hard to throw toilets off bridges.
It's like, that's why the garage is stacked to the rafters with toilets. I'm just...
he's waiting until everyone's vaccinated.
I'm waiting until it's safe to go throw these things off a bridge.
Thank you, Dylan.
That was really sweet.
I'm imagining like the good, clean fun he's getting into. Like he's going into a toilet stall with a marker and writing like, sit on it.
Well, this shit's lit.
Matthew, do you have any thoughts on how we're raising you? On our parenting style?
No.
Okay.
Do you feel like you're happy?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That means they're doing a good job.
Matthew only emerges from his cave every once in a while to sit awkwardly around the house in a very inconvenient place. Like I'll walk out of the kitchen and he's laying like face first on the floor watching a YouTube video with his feet up in the computer chair.
He sits like somebody in my family.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Real weird. And you're like, I get it. It's uncomfortable. I get it.
This is reminding me of, a conversation I had with friend of the podcast, Duncan, about his parents. Because Duncan is like the most wholesome, nice guy ever. And, you know, I was like, how did that happen? Like, what happened to you? And he said that he asked his dad what his dad thought about being a parent. And his dad told him, I, at a very early age, when shortly after you were born, I realized that all of the problems that you would have were as real to you as the problems that I have are real to me. And I was like so completely floored by his dad having that kind of like ability to step outside his own head and think about him, you know, because my dad definitely looked at me as like a competitive equal. So if I was like, hey, somebody was mean to me in school, he'd be like, well, I just did 12 hours at the foundry and then took a half hour nap and then had to go be a security guard at the grocery store where everybody made fun of me for 4 hours. And then I came home and drained 4 beers and slept 4 hours and went back to work. And I'm like, yeah, but they're really mean to me at school. You know, so he was like, I'm sorry, I can't solve your problems. You know, like that was just the framework through which he was viewing things. And I just, you know, that, I mean, that requires some like real compassion and, and, you know, other things my dad lacks.
But what's cool though, is that you're able to take that experience and think about it in a way that's going to shape the way you interact with your son, you know, and kind of break that cycle. So like I was raised with this idea that I had to be the best. Right. Like, and if it wasn't the best, then it wasn't worth talking about. So like getting second chair flute when June got first chair clarinet was like a shame on the household. Right.
Oh, yikes.
And,
we still talk about it when June's there.
And so one of my, I guess, just kind of like my new life philosophies is like, you can't always be the best at everything. Right. And obviously I'm not someone who's real competitive, but I'm really hard on myself, but I'm not competitive with other people. And so it's the mindset that you've got to be better. Like, how can I be better than yesterday? How can I raise my kids
for
to be
yourself.
Better?
Yeah.
Right. And so I want my kids to be better people, but I don't want to go so far as like some parents that are the, you know, the quote unquote helicopter parent where like you protect and you create all these things for your kids. Cause that's not natural. Cause one day they're going to leave your house and they're gonna be like, oh wait, no one made my breakfast for me.
Yeah.
Right? Like my kids are getting their own breakfast. I don't know. They can do that. So it's a matter of like, how do you help this individual figure out the tools they need to go be successful in life and to be better at what they're doing? I want my kids to have a better relationship with their parents than I feel like I have with my parents. Not to say that my parents and I don't get along. It's just not as close as what I would want. Like I want my kids to be able to tell me that they're having a bad day for no particular reason. They just need some space. Get it. I've had that feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What advice would you give us and other people just embarking on this journey? Like our baby's very young.
Relax.
That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Like, do you think he needs to lose weight? Because he's kind of fat.
He is pretty chubby.
Wear vertical stripes.
It's just his cheeks. It's just in the cheeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got extremely
chubby. He's very heavy in the cheeks. But I was really hoping that my son would have like really well-defined cheekbones.
Like a strong jawline.
Yeah.
He has really long, big
toes. Just
get him.
Cosmetic
I feel like
surgery.
He's going to be really tall.
I have really long, big toes too.
Yeah.
That's one of the freakish genetic anomalies he's going to inherit from me.
Yeah, if you had short toes, that would look real weird.
Right.
With big feet. Like really big feet and little like tiny chubs. Yeah.
I think the thing to remember is like no day is going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
No. Right. Like think about yourself. I probably learned this when Matthew was a toddler and I would get worried because there would be days that he would want to eat nonstop and there would be days that he ate nothing.
Yeah.
And I thought about it and I was like, you know what? There's days that I don't want to eat.
Right. He's just a person.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's days he's going to burn more calories than others. There's days he's just not going to be in the mood for something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything. Like everything doesn't mean something.
Right.
That's so hard for us because we are, as everyone knows, we are such planners. And actually our doulas said this to us sort of sassily the other day when we saw them and they were like, we learned this about you guys. You like planning ahead, but they said it in a way that was like, that's bad. And we were like, since when is planning a bad thing? But I do think that with a baby, we kept, and we still do this now, where it's like he'll have a night where he doesn't sleep well. Like last night, he was waking up every few hours, and it's so hard for us to not be like, okay, we're embarking on this like year-long thing where our baby's never going to sleep again. And then it's like the next night he sleeps fine.
Like there's nights that I toss and turn.
Yeah.
And there's nights I sleep like a baby.
Right.
So
give the situation time to develop.
Yeah.
And you just have to like one off day or like one off meal or a weird bump. You have to be like, I'll give it like 3 days.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about like, you know how we talk about this frequently, but like the passage of time feels so much faster as you get older, right? So like we watched our wedding video the other night with our son.
You were all in it.
You were all in it. All four of you. It was adorable.
Was it when Matthew was giving Gary a wedgie?
No, we didn't get that on film.
But Dylan and Matthew are both very tiny and very cute. Yeah. It was 5 years ago.
And we were thinking our wedding feels like yesterday. Like 5 years ago when you're 40 years old feels literally like yesterday.
Yeah.
But to you guys, Dylan and Matthew, our wedding probably feels like a century ago. No? Feels like yesterday? You're totally blowing up my whole thing right now. Did you miss Maya's speech about yes and before we hit the mics? Well, anyway, to me, when I was, 15, if you talked about something that occurred when I was 10, I would have been like, that's a lifetime ago, right? Like, so if you extrapolate that backwards to where our son is at, he's 7 weeks old.
Yeah.
Every single day that goes by is a massive swath of his life going by and changing and like new things happening. So if something happens in the morning today, it's like something happened like by tonight, it's like something happened when I was 15 years old. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just like, I'm trying to keep in mind that there's these like huge evolutions happening for him. And we're just like, oh man, this went bad this morning. We got to try to never let this happen again. Any other morning starting
meanwhile,
tomorrow.
Meanwhile, he's gained like 5 pounds. Yeah. He's a totally different baby.
And he's a completely different person tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So I've just been trying to keep that in mind. Like this whole thing is spinning up for him and changing.
We've also, I think the other thing we've been doing recently is we've finally started taking him out of our house. That's a new thing.
Yeah. We took him to 2 bars already.
He's been to 2 bars. He loved them. I think he just slept the whole, well, one of them I had to feed him there, but the other one he slept the whole time. But it's like, I think it is helping. I think we're trying to do the thing where we're incorporating him into our life instead of just sitting around staring at him. And that we were saying the other day, like when we leave the house with him, it feels less like we're just sitting around panicking, waiting for something to go wrong. It's just sort of like, we're just having a day.
Yeah. Even if we're just running errands with him in the car seat and he's napping, that feels so much better than like us hanging out with him napping, on his little,
trying not to wake him up.
Yeah. Like it feels so much more like he's with us instead of us.
It also makes us very proud of ourselves. Cause we're like, we took the baby outside today. Hey,
we went to the dump today and we took the baby.
Little goals,
It's like you need a parenting achievement badge.
Yes, really.
We took our baby to the dump and I ate a chicken biscuit in the parking lot.
That is true. That's what we did the other day.
I mean, it is crazy because there's going to be, you spend all of this time taking care of everything because it's this little lump that can't tell you anything, right? And so you're always like, is that a happy cry, a sad cry? Is something pinching you, poking you? Do you hate this outfit? And then one day you'll realize like you don't remember the last time like you had to help them in the bath. Right. Yeah. Like the one day I realized my kids take their own showers. No, but like it'll just hit me in a different way. And like yesterday picking up the baby, I was like, I just remember holding the baby and looking at Dylan and I was just flooded with remembering holding him because he was born at 9 pounds, 1 ounce. Like, you know what I mean? So I just remembered like holding him and just being like, oh my gosh, like all these, this flood of memories and feelings came back that I hadn't had in, 11 years.
Now he's like renting out presidential suites by himself and bathing himself.
Now they're like, hey, can I go drive the mule?
We're not in their life anymore. I don't like that.
They feed themselves. I haven't had to wipe a tush in forever.
So I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Mom, mommy, or mother?
Oh, I don't know. I've been thinking about that.
I want to be papa. Papa. But papa.
Papa.
I didn't mean to disappoint you, papa.
Is that really what you want him to call you?
Dad.
Peepaw.
Wait, what do they call it on Little House on the Prairie?
Call me Peepaw.
Paw and Ma.
That's my Peepaw.
Schuylkill County says mommy.
Really?
Yeah. So you have like grown men like, hey, mommy. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Well, and it's funny because Tom and I don't refer to each other as mom and dad when we talk to our kids. Like, we just never have.
Mother and father.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like...
Even in the bedroom. What would you like to do tonight, father? I'm like, well, mother.
Kids are sitting right here.
They are still sitting right here.
They don't know what we're... It could have been like we have a Peloton in the bedroom.
Well, so one day it was funny because, I don't know, I was like, guys, go tell your daddy goodnight. And all three of them just stopped and looked at
they
me.
They were like, ew. Yes.
They're like, what daddy. Is daddy? What is wrong with you? And Tom's like, yeah, what is wrong with you?
I think, yeah, that's my issue with mommy and daddy. Because I'm like, then what if he doesn't grow out of that?
It's too sexy.
I think, yeah, I think... We'll have him call you Zaddy. Yeah.
Zaddy.
Yeah.
Hey, puppy.
We'll just go with the standard mom, dad.
Mom and dad. Yeah.
Maybe when he's little, mama, maybe. We'll see
it's
how
like
that goes.
Like a grandma. Yeah. Like you would call like a grandma mama, right?
No.
No. You're people thinking say Nana. Mama. Think about all those mama bear t-shirts that all the moms wear on Instagram.
Yeah, so you don't want that. You don't.
So if like his first word is like, mama, you like
no,
slap
mom.
Him across the mouth.
Not in my house.
Try again.
Matthew went through a phase where he liked to call you Tom.
He thought it was funny.
I just call him short sacks now.
That's good.
Yeah. And this is it. This is as tall as they're getting.
Yeah.
So tough luck. Just get used to it.
Yeah, you shouldn't ridicule him if you're going to max out there, you know?
You guys are fantastic parents. We really appreciate getting to watch you raise these kids because I feel like we learned a lot from it.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Do you think that we will be able to keep this baby alive until he's 18?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Do you think he'll be happy or tortured?
Probably tortured.
Probably tortured.
I think, yeah. I hope that we can give him a happy childhood, but I think being Eric's son, it might just be...
Well, I think it's going to be because it's going to be the opposite of Eric, right?
You're putting that all on me?
I'm not tortured.
Like... Eric is a tortured soul because he was trying to respond to the lack of attention.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And instead it's going to be the opposite where it's going to be so much that this is going to be like, my dad is obsessed with me.
I know.
Like, can we?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or what if he rebels and gets like real yuppie and just wears like vineyard?
That's what Eric always says. That's his biggest
I know.
Fear.
It's going to be like family ties. Like I'm going to have a little Alex Keaton and he's going to be a little Republican.
Like who? We just showed up with a golf club in our car this time, right?
Yeah. Your other son, Matthew, asked to play my drums yesterday. And instead of just handing them the sticks and saying, going for it, I talked to him for like 15 minutes straight about time signatures and how to build beats. And I literally watched the light go out in his eyes. Yeah. And I was like, anyway, so here you go, sport. And like, it was like, he may as well have just like dropped the sticks on the floor and walked away. And that is the perfect example of the kind of dad I'm going to be.
Yeah, that is what's going to happen. We talk about that all the time because Eric's like, I'm going to build him a little guitar. And I'm like, just prepare yourself that he may not want to play guitar. We don't know.
He won't.
Yeah.
I know.
Or he may want to and just not be good at it. And the whole time you're like,
yeah, like imagine that. Imagine if he sucks at drumming and you have to sit there and like, what if he's enthusiastic like you, but not good at things like you?
Yeah.
I'm more enthusiastic than I am good at things. So I would appreciate the enthusiasm.
Okay. So as long as he's enthusiastic about something, it doesn't need to be something that you care about. Yeah.
Enthusiasm is really what I value.
Here's the thing. You guys are a good time to hang out with. You're going to have a good time with this child in your life. Right. And so I think he's going to enjoy his childhood. I think he's going to have a lot of fun. And I think you guys are going to have a lot of fun. Just allow yourself to like...
Have fun.
Have fun.
Yeah. I feel like we're just like the past week or two, we're turning the corner where we're getting to the point where we're like, we can kind of enjoy spending time with him. Kind of.
Yeah. I'm kind of seeing him as a little person and less like just sort of this like problem to be solved constantly. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm enjoying his presence.
I mean, right now the problems are like eat, sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Clean.
Yeah, they're not very big problems, but they still feel overwhelming sometimes.
Well, the problems are when those things don't happen the way they're supposed to, you know? It's
well,
like,
they do. You just expect them another way.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh, can I tell the story about the other day when he had that blowout?
Yeah, I don't care.
He had a big blowout. We both...
That's what we call it when his poop explodes out of his clothing.
It was all over him. It was all over his little seat. It was all over both of us, like all up and down my arms and on Eric's shirt. It's disgusting. Yeah. So we just put him in the bathtub and we put him in this little baby thing and he was laying there and he started peeing all over his face while we were in the bathtub. Yeah. And Eric said, the aristocrats.
That was good, right?
It was so funny. Yeah.
I never turn it off.
I know.
I'm always on.
But I think just the point that, like, I think if that had happened a few weeks ago, we would have both been like beside ourselves that we were covered in poop and that now the baby was also peeing on his own face.
Yeah.
But it's nice that we're able to find the humor in that, you know? Yeah. It's like we can actually laugh when those things are happening, which took us a while to get to. So I feel optimistic.
Yeah.
Which, you guys are only 8 weeks into a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
We're just taking it one day at a time.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, it's so cliche, but it's going to fly by. Like,
especially as geriatric millennials. How much time do I really have left on this planet?
So give yourself some time. Relax.
What's that thing people keep saying to me? The days are long, but the years are short.
Yeah.
Shut up. Stop telling me that. I know. I don't need to hear that. I get it.
You got a coffee mug with that on it.
Yeah. I bought a little baby subscription box that sends like age appropriate toys. And so for his current age, it was like
a coffee cup,
piece of wood and like a little mitten for, you know, like not really.
There's
exciting.
A coffee cup and a French press.
They included a coffee cup and it was wrapped up and it said a little something for you, right? Like they're being so nice and giving me a coffee cup because I'm the mom and I need something nice. And then I opened it and it said that on it. It said the days are long, but the years are short. And I was like, why do you think I want to sit here while I'm drinking my morning coffee and think about how I'm going to be dead soon? That's not really helpful.
Hey, just take a minute and think about the fact that you're going to be dead soon anyway. Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Maybe that's our parenting advice for all parents is,
remember,
hey,
you're
going, like,
to be dead soon?
No. Yeah. But I get it. I was just thinking, like, your identity isn't being a parent.
Thank you.
Like, that is part of your life, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be you.
Yeah.
That's when you wake up and you're like an empty nester and you don't know how to do your life because all you've done is just consume. And
that's also probably
mom,
when you like obsess unhealthily over your kids and like cause all kinds of problems for them. Like, but I love that. It's like, you're still you.
Yeah.
You're just also a parent.
Yeah. Like, I can still go to concerts. Dylan's first concert, I took him to see Blink. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he liked at the time. Oh, he loved it.
People was it like, with Tom? Cool. With Tom or without Tom? Not
it
that
was
Tom,
without
Tom from Blink.
It was Matt.
Oh, damn.
I know, but it was when, what was that, California?
That was a cheap facsimile of Blink 182.
But you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to encourage him to do fun things. I'm going to do fun things. I'm not going to, like, not do things just because I have a kid now. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, my fun's gone.
And then force them to do what you like to do.
Oh, yeah. I took him to a Dropkick Murphy show. Matthew almost got,
rancid,
like, ran over.
Murphys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. Good time.
We just, like you guys said, we just bring them on into whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, it's a cool part of me, but I don't think people see me and just think, Dylan's mom.
Yeah. Dylan probably does, but that's. Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's Jen.
He thinks, mommy. Yeah. That's my mommy.
That's my mommy. Hey, guys, don't mind her. It's just my mommy.
Yeah, you're allowed to still be you. You're allowed
mommy.
To still
That's
be
my
you.
Mommy. She bathes me in the Ronald Reagan suite at the Hilton.
Bill Clinton.
Be you and raise a better version of you.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really good. Yep. That's a good summary. Well, thank you guys so much. I think it's unbelievable this is the first time they've ever been on a podcast because they're naturals.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well,
more her than me.
You had some good jokes in there.
Yeah.
We'll see how they land with the audience.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much. We're glad that we got to do this. And I think this will be an inspiring episode.
Yes. A very special episode of, what's our podcast called?
The End of the World, as we know it.
And well, if that isn't a geriatric millennial, I don't know what is.
It's only on 7-inch, and you could expect that pressing in 3 to 12 years.
I think it's been 12 years.
Yeah.
I don't think that's coming.
Time to boot Tom off the podcast.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Thanks, bye. Bye.